Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course. But, that's the name of the show. The other name is Off Topic.
But this is football.
His name was Jeremy. He was on WordPress with a passion for youth sports and some free time on his hands. That SB Nation, they came a-calling. Despite trying to perfect his art, he knew something wasn't right. Then Chris came writing on and started poking fun. They decided to start a podcast, and who could ask for more at the Mountain? Mountain West Connection. Just be sure you don't ever skip this section here at the Mountain. Mountain West Connection. Recaps and previews, such stats, and just random at the Mountain.
Welcome back to the latest Mountain West Connection podcast. You can join us at MWCConnection.com, MWC Connection on Facebook. You all know the place and drill where to find our random stuff at. It's Jeremy here. And I'm not joined by Chris today. Chris has more important stuff to do to work, or to do, I guess, his thesis. Instead, we're joined for part of the show from Matt or the road at Cowboy Altitude. CowboyAltitude.com to discuss what else Wyoming cowboy stuff. And so what's going on, man?
Hey, not too much. The off season started early for Wyoming, but it's been pretty busy so far this week. So it's been nice to have some good news happening.
That is some good news with the new. We're obviously going to talk about Craig Bull, the head coach, and probably a little bit about the season. But was there a surprise that ended up being him? Because his name was not throwing him out of the ball at all. There's a little bit from the guys at Coaching Search who had the name midweek but couldn't confirm anything. Was he kind of out of left field?
Well, his name was kind of thrown out early as a candidate, but then basically dismissed right away that he wouldn't have any interest and why would he want to come to Wyoming, blah, blah. And so, so it went really on Jeff Hedford as a candidate. And then, kind of a last-second announcement about Bull getting the job, which was amazing.
Yeah, he's done great stuff in North Dakota State. He's on his third straight national title. And was he the guy you wanted? If you heard the name, we've heard Jeff Tedford. We've heard there was Willie Fritz from St. Mises State, Ted Gilmore. Was any of the other guys excited you? Like, I kind of thought Tedford. Sorry, this audio is killing me. We're just going to go through. I'm just having some issues in my end here. But with Tedford, was he the guy you may have wanted because of the quarterback stuff he's done in college with Akili Smith, Joey Harrington, David Carr, you got Brett Smith for one more year?
Yeah. Well, when I kind of was reading over coaches, like honestly, Bowles was, I think, like the best candidate, like the dream candidate that would actually like want to really stay at Wyoming and build it up, like he'd done North Dakota State with Tedford. You can tell me he would just be looking for the best option as soon as possible. I doubt he would have much loyalty to the university, and he doesn't really have that much experience in the Front Range area. And I mean, if you can build a winner out of North Dakota State, you can do that anywhere. So I think it's impressive that the pedigree, and he loves the tough nature of Wyoming. He likes the cold weather, and he really embraces it. And that's what the state and the university needs.
And he's also brought up North Dakota State from D2 to FCS. So mm-hmm. He's already, that's a pretty big jump anyways, to go from that level to winning national titles. He's been there for what? Just over a decade.
Yeah.
And I don't recall when they moved up to FCS, but still, that's like going, obviously, having Old Dominion or Texas State winning and going to BCS bowl game in a couple years.
Exactly, yeah. They've only had one losing season under Bowl, and the year afterwards they won 9 games, so it was short-lived down period for them. So it's really incredible how they've done it. And really, also, one thing I've been kind of checking out is just like the roster that he put together, and there's a lot of players that are from North Dakota that are on the team. I haven't had a chance to delve into necessarily how big a contributors they are, but there's a really large chunk of players from North Dakota. So that's really a good sign that he's able to find talent in a small state and develop it and help. And that's really what Wyoming needs, because finding local talent's always been a struggle.
Yeah, plus Wyoming doesn't have, maybe three Division I players out of the whole state every year, only a handful at best. So if he can keep whoever's even decent in state, that's always a plus. And then also he's beaten recruits head-to-head between the two schools. And I looked at the recent recruiting rankings. This year's pretty early because Wyoming has what, Austin Ford, Independent, like maybe one or two other guys.
Yeah, total of 3 current commits at this time.
It was a 3?
Yeah, total of 3. Austin Fort from Wyoming, of course. And then there is Richard Betancourt, lineman from Idaho. And then Jordan Stanton, who's actually the younger brother of Sam Stratton, wide receiver for Wyoming. He's also a defensive lineman, but he's a commit. I guess Stanton is the one who's kind of on the fence. He wants to make sure that his commitment will be honored. So he may be looking elsewhere, but I expect with only 3 current commits that Bowl will honor those. Cause I mean, certainly they need as much help as they can get right now. And it's going to be hard to fill recruiting class.
Go to bed now. Yeah, because looking at the rankings this year is pretty tough, I was about to say, with just a few guys. Wyoming's like a 155, and we know there's only 125 FBS school, whereas North Dakota State's like a 110 or 115, somewhere in that range.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you can see he's doing a good job being one of the probably the top Fs. He was clearly the high in the Missouri Valley when I looked. He had a 1 3-star guy, and this year's still early, especially with the lower levels like Wyoming or FCS, because everybody, they kind of get guys closer to signing day who might get left over from whatever, you know, people pull scholarships and that garbage that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be good. But what do you think about them basically bringing the whole staff? Like, they're bringing everybody for North Dakota State.
Majority of the play, yeah. So right now the rumor is that he's offered spots to 5 of his current staff members to come over. That includes the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, wide receiver, coach, and recruiting coordinator, and then a couple others as well. So, I mean, the key ones are definitely the OC and the DC. And really, I mean, North Dakota State, I mean, their bread and butter has been a stout defense. And that's what I think the key is bringing him over. He has the coordinator, his name kind of passing me by right now, but he may be a candidate for the head position right now at North Dakota State. So hopefully he'll be able to come to Wyoming and continue to work with Bowl. I think that would be ideal.
Is there anybody at Wyoming's staff that's going to stay?
There was one candidate one coach that is going to stay. It was announced by the university, Pete Kalgus, who was co-offensive coordinator last year and also the running backs coach. He's been to Wyoming for 5 years, and he's just an awesome guy. All the players love him. He kind of looks like Bald Bull from Nintendo, like Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. He's got the handlebar mustache. But he's a funny character, and all the players love him. So they were really excited to hear that he's coming back, and I'm really excited as well. I think he's key to the team. Just make it a family environment. So that's good to see that they carried him over.
Was there any surprise when Christensen was either, I guess he technically fired, even though he said he resigned early on, was there any surprise that was coming down?
It really seemed like as the last couple weeks went on that there wasn't going to be much like support from the university, and really it was like he was probably ready to go and that the school was ready for a change. Because it didn't really seem like there was going to be much hope or much optimism really heading into next year under him.
So what happened this year? We'll kind of rehash a little bit for the 2013 season. But they started off pretty good. The close loss to Nebraska, played very well beyond that. But then the Texas State loss, and then it seemed to just fall apart.
Yeah, well, what definitely affected things was the defense, which was kind of has been an Achilles heel of the Cowboys under Christensen is the defense, which is a total flip-flop of under Joe Glenn when the defense was amazing. But the defense, they started off well. They definitely took the brunt of the injuries this year. They had like five or six guys that had season-ending injuries that were key contributors, and that really, really hurt their play. I mean, by the end of the season, I remember the Boise State game, they only had about 15 players available on defense.
For defense?
For 11 spots, yeah. Jeez. So when you're playing a team like Boise, that's not a good combination whatsoever.
Okay, I remember there were some injuries, but it just seemed that they got some points, but they just couldn't stop anything. Then, John Wick, Robert Heron, everybody knows Brett Smith, of all they had, even the names passing me by, the freshman wide receiver that did pretty good.
Dominic Rutherford, yeah.
Another freshman that was did okay.
Tanner Gentry, yes.
Yes, that's it, correct. They had some talent, but it just kind of seemed, that Hawaii game was exciting to watch, but, that was a lot of terrible defense.
Yeah, and with the way the offense was set up, I mean, they're designed to score really, really quickly, and all that does is put way more pressure on a weak defense unit. I mean, the defense, they would start off strong. They would always do well in the first half of games, but they didn't have depth. They couldn't rotate players in and out, and they were exhausted in the second half, and it got ugly every single game in the second half. That they lost big in, so.
Yeah, and I'm about to say, and I completely forgot. That went along those lines. You said, hush. I don't even remember what I was going to say. Something about, obviously. about their offense. I'll just move on from that, because I had something I was going to say that just what you just mentioned, and it's kind of went through one ear and out the other. Took a half a second pause to think about it, but okay. So, with who could be coming back? Because I assume Brett Smith, even though he gave no comment about coming back, we're assuming he's coming back. Well, if some other guys back on offense, what do you kind of big picture look ahead that could be the case for next year? What happens? A very, very early look with a new staff and probably new offense, new defense, new everything.
Yeah,
Definitely
should be those a lot of returning starters. Brett Smith actually has, I guess he said that he's not transferring. That's what he's definitely said. I know the
cast. Well, hasn't he already redshirted as well? So he'd have to be the graduate transfer.
Actually, no, he hasn't transferred at all. He didn't redshirt at all. He played as a true freshman.
Okay, I see.
Day one.
So, oh, that's right. Yeah, that's correct.
He said he's not going to transfer at all. It never crossed his mind. I think the one possibility that can still be out there, I mean, he's played 3 years, so he could consider coming out early if he wanted to. He's definitely gotten some good praise from NFL draft experts, so there's the potential there. This is a really talented quarterback class already, I'd say. So
yes.
There may not be in his best interest to do that this year. But, I mean, and honestly, there were some down games that he had, so he may be looking to prove a little more. So I wouldn't be surprised if he goes out, though. And, I mean, obviously, he needs to kind of look out what's best for him. And so it's an option that could be out there that has not been rolled out by him as far as like any public announcement. So
I see. So heading that last game against Utah State, they had the chance to be bowl eligible. What was your confidence level heading into that game? It's on the road, it's a good team.
Yeah, I mean Utah State's defense is the best in the conference, and they shut them down, and when it comes against like good defense and good offense versus good defense, the defense usually steps up. And honestly, I mean, if they had been bowl eligible, they would have been passed over. I mean, San Jose State got passed over.
Good point, yeah, most likely. Especially if anyone would have resigned, would have had the Craig Bowl situation, most likely.
Yeah, yeah. And so that would have been interesting if if they did win and go 6-6, if they did bring Christian back or not, because there are some people saying that basically his the last game determined his
the Hawaii game
status. If they would have been 6-6, that he would have brought Christian back based on that. We'll see if that was true or not. But
yeah, he's gone, so you got the Craig Bull era. So one last thing, what's your I probably already mentioned this, asked this before, but what's like your 1 to 10? Where do you put this ranking out of over all of the other names we mentioned?
Honestly, I think in the long term, it's pretty much a 9.5 out of 10. I think as far as ideal fit for Wyoming, Bull is really the ideal candidate. I think he's excited to be there. He wants to be at Wyoming, and he wants to stay there and grow. And I think that's really going to be beneficial for the university to have someone who's has the head coaching experience, because Christensen came just as offensive coordinator, and that was really his focus. But Bowl wants to oversee both sides of the ball, and he knows that you can't win without one of those working. So he'll make sure that Wyoming's a more balanced team, which is important.
Yeah, actually, what, 5 offensive coordinators every year, or defensive coordinators almost every year, it seemed like. One last thing. I was on some Las Vegas radio station. They asked me, where does Wyoming get the money? Because they're paying them a good amount of money, Craig Bull. Where does it come from? Is it just the natural gas money there in Wyoming that's lying around?
Yeah.
Plenty of British alumni who are still cattle herding, farming, whatever, oils, drilling for oil up there.
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, where these funds are coming, but they definitely said that the funds are just coming from school revenue. They're not using any private funds at all as part of this process. So apparently they were able to
they're doing get well. Some
budget increase or they had something shifted somewhere. I mean, honestly, well, his overall salary is really not going to be that much higher, or maybe even slightly less than what Christian had, but his guaranteed salary is much higher.
So I mean, it seemed like, because I kind of sifted through it, because the Casper Star Tribune did it pretty good. Like, the average is like 905 or so throughout the life of the contract.
Yeah, it starts at year, 750 guaranteed, and then goes up 50,000 per year for 5 years. So, I mean, if he gets fired, there's definitely a lot of money left on the table that they're going to owe him. That was the good thing about Christian's contract is his base salary was only
like one something, wasn't it?
It was really low. So when they're paying him the last 3 years of his contract, that's all that is due.
It was like $500,000 or something, wasn't it?
About a little less than 600,000. So I mean, comparatively, and that's, those 3 years are less than 1 year what they're playing, guaranteed to pay Craig Bowl. So
pretty much. And then was the housing allotment that put over the edge?
Yeah, the extra $750 a month. I think that'll be he'll just get a nice apartment close to the campus. He can just walk every day, I'm sure. No, I'm sure he'll have a nice house.
It's hilarious, that amount. I don't know what the cost of living, Laramie, probably not too expensive, but I don't know, $750 seems easily, because he gets everything paid for. He gets a car, the Cheyenne Country Club membership, cell phone paid for. He has access to a jet, or not a jet, but a plane because he's a pilot. But $750 is just kind of a laughter. Here's where you can live on, $750 a month to go towards your housing.
Yeah, I think he can probably use the other $750,000.
Yeah, I think he's okay.
Find a decent place.
It just seemed like an interesting amount. That's less what I pay for my place.
Yeah, he's a pilot. Like, there's no, we haven't seen a copy of the contract that he actually is going to get access to the plane. That was kind of a tweet that came out from a Husker, yeah, like a Nebraska reporter. But yeah, he definitely, Craig Bull flies a ton on his own. I guess he would fly and visit like every single high school in North Dakota, even if they didn't have any D1 prospects, just because he wanted to build connections in the state.
Wasn't there also some coach in the SEC, I don't remember, took a helicopter? I forgot. Like, was it James Franklin or Vanderbilt who did that?
Maybe, yeah. I
remember hearing about that.
SEC stories.
But if he's able to actually fly the plane and do it, man, do it. Do whatever you can.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so I mean, if that gets people's attention, that's what that's good for Wyoming.
Definitely. They need all they can get.
As long as nothing bad happens. But I mean, he's been doing this for years, so hopefully he wouldn't go out in risky weather.
Definitely. Oh yeah, there could be some nasty weather up in this area. It's pretty. Last weekend was an example of that. So is there anything else you want to add or wrap it up here? As I said 5 minutes ago, anything else you want to add about Wyoming football or anything we should know about before I let you go?
I guess it's going to be kind of a waiting game. We have to wait till the Bison end their playoff run since he's going to still coach them. So that'll be interesting to see how well he can motivate the team and the staff can motivate the team, kind of knowing that they have 1 foot out the door. And then I guess it'd be interesting to see if Wyoming fans are rooting for the Bison to do well and go far in the playoffs, or if they're like, just lose so that way you can move here sooner. But I mean, I think it'll be good exposure for Wyoming because every time the Bison play, like this Saturday they're playing Coastal Carolina on ESPN. So, I mean, that's going to be good publicity for the university.
That'll be tough fighting up against the other coach. Because you know who the other coach is, right? He used to be the CEO of TD Waterhouse. He was on the gym room the other day. He's a pretty dynamic guy. So there might be a lot of dueling for who gets the better head coaching mention in the game.
Oh, I know, CD. That's good. So we got to take him.
Okay. So, yeah, what do you think, really quick? Do you want them to go far or just – because what you've noted, because the new recruiting rules, there's no in-home visits basically from now until the middle of this January, a month.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you care if they do well or not? Because you said you get exposure, but if you lose, you can spend every moment in Wyoming.
I mean, if you can say, I've been a 3-time national coach champion, that is going to do more overall for the good of recruiting than just extra couple weeks that are going to be hard to do a lot of recruiting anyways during the holidays because you can't do in-home visits. And I think he can still do a lot of coordination even if he is in North Dakota. He can still make sure that letters are sent out and work on recruiting even if he's not in the office necessarily.
Okay, that makes sense. I guess if you can't visit him, you can have other guys do stuff for you. So thank you for joining us for the show here. We got Matt from Cowboy Altitude. Jesus, thing's annoying me. CowboyAltitude.com. Thanks for joining us, Matt. And everybody, just check out his website. He'll have updates throughout the year, maybe some hoops stuff, perhaps, if they can do some well. But a lot of football going over there. And thanks for joining us tonight, man.
Thanks, Jeremy.
All right. And now we're joined by Jeff Nestor from KookCenter.com to discuss all things Washington State versus New Mexico. Or wait, let me start that again. Washington State versus Colorado State, the New Mexico Bowl. See, I screw up right from the beginning, so whatever.
That's okay.
Bowl game in a decade, man. That's exciting.
Yeah, I know. There's just so much excitement. You can't contain yourself.
Exactly. I'm reading. The reason I said that is because I'm reading, like, you have a post about, here, guide to New Mexico, and that's why I stayed in New Mexico first. Like, Lobos aren't going bowl, and it's the Rams. So, yeah, first bowl game, like I said before, since the Holiday Bowl against Texas a decade ago. So how – what's the excitement level like? Second year with Mike Leach, they get to 6-6. I guess by your Washington State standard, that's much improved to go to a bowl game in a long time. Was this kind of what you expected? A little bit better? Was it not quite there yet? Or how was it? Like, what's the excitement level? What was the expectations to make it this far to get to a bowl game in the second year?
Everybody is super, super excited. This was not expected. Even our athletic director, Bill Moose, even before the year started, was sort of downplaying expectations. It was a little bizarre, you know. So when Mike Leach was hired, there was of course much fanfare, and people were rightly freaking out about the fact that, you know, WSU for the first time in its history really had lured a proven coach and was able to pay him, you know, an amount that was fair for a proven coach. And then last year, of course, was sort of a disaster. They ended up only winning 3 games. And it was felt like, you know, it was bowl game or bust last year after, you know, winning 4 games the year before, feeling like they were sort of on the upswing. And then, of course, everything was a wreck, a train wreck, you know, sort of culminating with Marquise Wilson walking out on the team and allegations of abuse and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, so when we came into this year, you know, really felt that perhaps the talent level still wasn't quite there. And that, you know, this might be, you know, one more sort of rough year and three or four wins before they take a big jump next year. And you know, things got off to a really great start, though, with a narrow loss to Auburn, which the Auburn we played that first week was not the Auburn that beat Alabama and won the SEC a week ago. But, you know, it did show was a pretty significant step forward. They were down by a touchdown and were driving in the red zone with under 2 minutes to go in an effort to tie the game before Connor Halliday threw an interception. So, you know, there was sort of signs early that they were moving in the right direction. The next week they traveled to L.A., so they started the season with two games on the road. Second game went into USC, into the Coliseum, and beat USC. Now, everybody wanted to sort of downplay that again because of the Lane Kiffin factor or whatever, but the fact of the matter was, you know, that was a game that the program had not won at all in the last 5 years. No matter how badly the other team played, the talent gap was such that it really didn't matter. And so the team sort of went through some ups and downs. You know, they beat their two weak non-conference opponents at home, you know, had some downs, had some ups, eventually, you know, really got straightened out. In fact, rock bottom was Arizona State. And at that point, everybody sort of figured the season was over. They were 4-5. They were needing to win two of their last three just to get to six wins, facing a road game against Arizona, a home game against Utah, and a road game against Washington in the Apple Cup. And went down to Arizona and beat Arizona. It was a very unexpected result. And all of a sudden, you know, bowl eligibility was sort of within reach. And the next week at home against Utah, jumped out to a 21-0 lead thanks to a couple of pick sixes and ended up winning the game to get to that sixth win. And so we are incredibly excited to be back in a bowl game. New Mexico is sort of not the sexiest location, and in fact has actually proved to be a little difficult to get to from Seattle during the holidays. But just the mere fact we're back in a bowl game is super exciting. There's a feeling that this team overachieved a little bit to get there, and that's always a really good feeling like, you know, the coach that you're paying a couple million dollars was able to coach a couple extra wins out of the team. So everybody's very excited. We feel like the program's definitely heading in the right direction.
Yeah, it's good to see year two, you make the big jump, bowl game. So, yeah, I was looking at your schedule, like, yeah, Oregon, you had Oregon, well, Arizona State, then two blocks, and you make that turnaround versus a pretty good Arizona team and Utah, which is, I'm not going to get into Utah, but, that game, oh, man. But, yeah, get to a bowl game. It doesn't matter. You could be going to the bowl in the last week. Get most wins you've had in a long time. That's always a positive. And so, before we get to any football stuff, how's the status of the charter plane going to the Mexico Bowl?
Yeah, they actually did work out a charter. It's expensive as crap, though, man. So your two-day all-inclusive charter and hotel package is $1,500 a person.
Wow.
Yeah. And if you just wanted just the airfare, it's $1,000. So, yeah.
And that's from Pullman, right? It's leaving from Pullman, right?
It's leaving from Spokane, which is about an hour and a half north of Pullman, depending on how fast you drive. and then also from Seattle. So there's one leaving from Spokane, one leaving from Seattle. It turns out that, you know, it's bizarre. You know, Albuquerque is, you know, you can get to most anywhere from, I live just outside Seattle. You can get most anywhere from SeaTac. With, you know, a lot of places with a direct flight. Even I'm taking a direct flight to Boston over the holidays from Seattle. But you can't, apparently it's next to impossible to get a direct flight to Albuquerque.
The Southwest go to Seattle? Because that seems like a good fit.
Southwest does, but I think even people who are flying Southwest are mostly puddle jumping. I think that's probably more an effort to save money, but it's sort of weird. I think of all the I've heard the other Pac-12 cities, it's much easier to get to Albuquerque than it is from Seattle, which kind of sucks because, you know, most of our alumni are up here, either in Seattle or near Spokane. So
wouldn't it be easier to drive to Boise and fly down? Because Spokane can't be too far from Boise, a couple hours, right?
I've even heard of people over on this side of the state booking flights out of Portland that are cheaper, driving down to Portland. And I don't know what it is. It's cheaper about Portland. Portland's about 2.5 hours south of Seattle. So I've heard of people drive, you know, they're planning to drive to Portland to save a couple hundred bucks on their airfare. So I don't know.
Got to get there any way you can, I guess.
Since it's 10 years. Unfortunate timing this year because it's the bowl game is so close to Christmas where, in previous years it would be a little bit earlier. But it's just sort of the way the schedule worked out with Thanksgiving being so late. So.
Yeah. All right. So let's actually get to some football business. No more travel talk. Yeah. Reminiscing. But let's go. So we got Washington State. Everybody knows what Mike Leach does. He's going to pass and pass. Is this what he's – because I haven't really seen Washington State play this year, maybe more than a handful of plays or something. So is this what he exactly did at Texas Tech, just running 4 wide receivers, 5 wide receivers, letting Connor Halladay throw it 80 times a game, it seems like, or, 60 to whatever times. Is that what he's doing, or is he actually mixing in some sort of decency of a running game?
No, it's pretty much exactly what it's always been. And, in fact the running game isn't quite as good as what he had at Tech. I think that's he's actually thrown it more last couple of years. I know, right? The last couple of years. It's just been because, last year the offensive line was a train wreck. They couldn't run the ball at all. This year they've been more effective. They've had a couple games over 100 yards. They've been able to break off chunks of yardage this year where they really weren't able to at all last year. So they've run it. They've run it some, but they're still, the offensive line, while pretty vastly improved, is still not. They're still not gonna road grade anybody most of the time in order to get down there. In fact, when they've played, real athletic, big fronts like USC and Stanford. Auburn was the exception. I think Auburn, there was a little bit of a surprise factor with how well they were able to run the ball there. But USC, Stanford, teams with big athletic fronts, even when they've had favorable numbers in the box, opportunities to run, they've oftentimes just kept throwing it. Again, Oregon was another example. Often just kept throwing it because they just sort of know they can't necessarily beat a front like that, even hat on hat. So it's been better, but they're still going to throw it 50, 60 times a game and really run it. It's going to be an 80-20 run, pass run ratio, and it's pretty much always going to be that way, I think, with Mike Leach.
Okay, I just want to make sure if it's what we all love and know about him for what he's done over the days.
You'll recognize it when you see it.
So with the offensive line, has that got any better? Because Colorado State is a very good linebacker. They have a couple good linebackers. Corey James, Shaquille Barrett was Mountain West Defensive Player of the Year, has, I think, 20 tackles for loss, 10 or 12 sacks or something. Do they have is offensive line good enough to protect if they're going to throw it that often? Because I'm assuming they're not going to put those linebackers in coverage all that often up against the wide receivers.
Yeah, the offensive line is vastly improved. Went from giving up, I want to say, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I did a post on this a while ago. Actually, it was after the Utah game. And so off the top of my head, I think this is what it is. Last year, they were giving up a sack about 1 out of every 10 dropbacks. So about 10% of the time, I think, is what it was. And this year, that number is all the way down to, I think, between 3% and 4%. And of the dropbacks. So the raw numbers still don't look great. I mean, it's like I think they've given up something like 25 sacks or something like that. But when you figure it as a percentage of dropbacks, because they do drop back so much, it's really, I think, 3.5% or 4%, which is really one of the better. It's the best mark Wazoo has had, I think, I want to say since about 2006 in terms of percentage of dropbacks. So huge improvement. In fact, I think Utah only had one sack, and that's a team that came into the game leading the nation in sacks. And so really huge improvement. It's the right side of the line is a bunch of seniors. They started a bunch of guys who used to be walk-ons. 3 guys, I think, who used to be walk-ons started on that line. Really great job by the offensive line coach. I believe that's Clay McGuire, molding these guys into a unit that can be effective. And they haven't been all world, but they've been good enough in most games and really saved their best play for the end of the year, I think.
So with there are so many times that's probably why he has 21 interceptions, but that's still got to be more than, you're obviously referring to Connor Halladay, but that's probably going to be more than what they really want out of that system.
Oh, for sure. He started out the year, last year interceptions were a huge problem. Start off the year this year, interceptions were again a problem. And the big issue was that they were, you know, the vast majority of them were decision related, you know, making poor decisions, forcing the ball into coverage, really trying to wedge it into places where it didn't belong, trying to make a play where there's really no play to be made, that kind of stuff. As the year went on, he got much better. I think he did throw two interceptions in the Apple Cup. The first one came with about, I want to say 5 or 6 minutes ago, and it was just a bad throw. You know, he made the right read, threw it about 2 feet behind the guy, and ended up in the defender's arms. And then they threw a second interception on a sort of a desperation drive at the end. They were down by 10, trying to score in about a minute, and got intercepted. And so the key is he's gotten much, much better with his decision making, to the point where I've gone from feeling like I'm really not sure he's the answer long term to feeling very comfortable with where the offense is heading, where he's heading, and with him at the controls heading into next year. He's much improved. His decision making's much improved. And you know, when you put the ball in the air 60 times a game, you're going to have interceptions. That's just a reality. As long as it's one or two a game, and they're related to you know, mechanical problems such as, you know, bad throws rather than bad decisions. That's stuff you can live with.
I see. And so one last thing in the offense, kind of, they throw the ball. There doesn't seem to be any. You got Gabe Marks, who's reception wise killing it pretty much over everybody by about 20 or so. But besides him, is there anybody like real go to guy, because they spread the touchdowns out pretty evenly between the top three guys? Any particular favorite target? Just like what Mike Leach says, whoever's open gets the ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of that. Yeah, the air raid is designed to, you know, just get the ball to whoever's open and spread the field and really make defenses defend all parts of the field. You know, Mike Leach talks about, whenever somebody asks Mike Leach about balance, you know, and typical football balance is run pass balance, right? Well, Mike Leach loves to talk about how, you know, in the air raid, balance is having some semblance of balance between the receivers so that everybody touches the ball, you know, between a certain range of amounts, you know. And so that's his idea of balance. Gabe Marks was the top target early in the year, but as the years got on, he's sort of faded back a little bit in that regard. In fact, really kind of dropped off the last couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, in a fairly stunning fashion. I don't know if there's a great explanation for it. The easiest explanation is that Vince Maley, who's the outside receiver on the other side, is a 6'3", 240-pound beast who is fast and physical and just scratching the surface of what he can be. He's a guy who is a junior college transfer, came to WSU. They thought maybe he would only have 1 year of eligibility, but it turns out they've gotten an appeal granted, and he'll have two. But he's very raw. He was a basketball player originally in junior college, which is where the eligibility issues came in as far as when his clock started ticking. But was a basketball player in high school, was a basketball player at JUCO, decided to take up football at his junior college, and all of a sudden it turns out, yeah, he's really good. And so he's a guy who, you know, for Mountain West fans who would be watching, while Gabe Marks is the guy who has sort of piled up the numbers this year, Maley is the guy who's emerged as probably Halliday's favorite target and somewhat of a security blanket because he is so physical, has real strong hands. Halliday really trusts him to make plays on the ball in the air.
All right. That's good stuff. I was looking at kind of what Marks has done the past little bit, right? He has not putting the big numbers. But let's go to the other side of the ball. Is this because I don't think Mike Leach, at least as far as I've seen him at Texas Tech and a little bit at Washington State. Does he even care about defense? Or he's like, you just do your thing, D coordinator, and kind of, I'll take care of the offense, you take care of the defense. Is that kind of how it is?
Yeah, it's definitely how it is. I mean, he cares about the defense in so much as he doesn't want him to be terrible. But
of course.
Mike Bresky is the guy who's the defense coordinator. Will be, you know, that's a name that could be familiar to Mountain West fans since he was the defensive coordinator at Wyoming for a few years and actually was pretty successful out there. Put together some pretty decent defenses by most metrics out there. And so he spent a year at Montana. Leach ended up bringing him to Washington State, and he's instituted some pretty significant improvements with the team, with the defense. The defense was sort of it was super awful under Paul Wolf and was just like comically terrible. Bresky came in and put in a 3-4, which, you know, turned out to be a pretty good decision. They brought in a junior college guy to be the nose tackle, Iwane Nauta, to be in there, and he turned into a guy who you know, who sort of anchored the defense, and they've really built around that. The biggest thing is that they're really physical and they're super fit. You'll see teams rotate linemen in a lot, linebackers a lot. WSU does not do as much of that as you would probably expect. Mike Leach is sort of famous for his off-season conditioning programs, and there was a huge difference between the conditioning of the team last year and this year, to the point where they went down to Auburn and barely rotated, you know, this is in August, barely rotated defensive linemen. We're easily the most fit team on the field, and we're still going strong at the end of the game. So I think the things you'll notice about the defense is they pride themselves on being physical at the line of scrimmage, and they aren't really the fastest laterally, and that's where teams have really gotten them fast. Teams that have been able to get to the edge have had success against them. Trey Mason for Auburn had success, and Oregon had some success running the ball, and Oregon State even had some success doing that with the things that they do going side to side. So, you know, that would be the thing to look for, but really you'll notice that they will come out with an attitude and they will come out to hit people. And it's a fun thing for WSU. Mike Bresky is very creative. He's a lot of fire zone blitzes where you kind of get the safe, you know, you're bringing four or five guys, but you're bringing them from weird angles to try and get pressure. So it's a fun defense to watch, and you know, they're going to try and certainly hit Colorado State's running back.
So yeah, that's what I was going to go to next with Capri Bibbs. He, second team All-America, announced today on Thursday from Walter Camp. He has 28 touchdowns. He gets about 6 yards a carry. He does it all. He kind of goes up the middle. He will take the ball outside a little bit. He has some speed. What's like the biggest concern trying to slow him down, or what's the kind of game plan to stop the running game? It's mostly him. Chris do okay. Donald Alexander may get a few carries, but it's going to be big, because even when he was shut down versus Utah State, he still had, I think, a couple touchdowns.
Yeah, I think it's tackling, really. I think it's that simple. You know, Wazoo has been okay against some of the better running backs they've faced. Even Trey Mason, like, you know, you take away, you know, a big run or two, and they were really able to bottle him up pretty good. They did a really nice job against Kadeem Carey from Arizona, who I think a lot of people consider to be the best running back in the country. Did a nice job on him. I think he had 125 yards, but that was, you know, you take out, he had a 30-yard run, and you take that out, and all of a sudden his average was under 4 yards. And so, I mean, they did a nice job there. They even had done a pretty okay job against Bishop Sankey in the Apple Cup until about the last quarter and a half, and he started breaking out. And really the common thread with running backs that have given them trouble this year has been tackling. When they're not tackling well, you know, they're not necessarily fast enough to make up for that. You know, if they miss a tackle, they're not able to rally, you know, two or three guys to the ball quickly enough to shut it down after a missed tackle. So they've got to be sure at the point of attack, got to be sure in the open field. The linebackers have been pretty good at that most of the year. So I think that's really probably going to be the key for them is against a running back who is very good and does run tough, making the tackle on the initial contact rather than, you know, letting the guy make the initial contact and then kind of wiggle loose for some extra yards.
I see. Because the Rams, they throw the ball okay. What is, just real quick, what do you think Washington State's better at? Would they be better suited? Would they want CSU to throw the ball more than try to run? Kind of, what do you think? Or what are they? What do they want to force Colorado State to do you think, to have a successful game on the bowl game?
Well, you know, we've been talking a lot about how this Colorado State team really is a really good matchup for Wazoo, because if we were saying, okay, what's WSU's strength on offense? Obviously throwing the ball, and that's Colorado State's biggest weakness. And then what's Washington State's biggest strength on defense? And that would be their run defense. And obviously that's where Colorado wants to try and get after you. And so I don't think Colorado State, it doesn't seem like anyway, from what I've seen so far, it doesn't seem like Colorado State is well positioned to take advantage of WSU's somewhat weak secondary. And so that is definitely something that we're fairly, I don't know if excited is the right word, but we feel pretty good about that. We feel pretty good that that Wazoo's run defense should be able to, you know, I'm not going to make any grand proclamations about shutting down or anything like that, because that would be a little silly. But I do feel like they are in a decent position to certainly do well enough up front, especially in the front seven, to contain Bibbs, I think.
Yeah, CSU, their quarterback, Garrett Grayson, he can be good. He cannot be good. So it kind of depends. I think it's pretty clear he needs to have a pretty good game to get to help them win and open up that running game. But one last thing, what do you kind of think the outcome is going to be in this game?
Well, I mean, if I'm being a total homer, you know, I'm saying, I think WSU is going to win. I mean, I think the main reason is, you know, that stuff I was just talking about. I think Wazoo matches up well with them. I think that, you know, I would think that given the rushing attacks Wazoo has seen this year and how they've done against most of them, I feel pretty good that even though obviously Colorado State has a good running attack, I feel pretty good that Wazoo is going to be good enough against that to be able to put the game on the quarterback's shoulders. And it seems like the quarterback is the type of guy who is generally more successful if the running game is really going, where he can hit some big plays over the top, you know, with the defense paying attention to Bibbs. So if WSU is able to control the line of scrimmage defensively, I think that's going to be a real key, and I think they're in okay position to do so. And I really don't see, you know, there's nothing I've seen yet. Again, I haven't watched a lot of Colorado State, so take it for what it's worth, but the metrics that I've seen suggest that Colorado State's going to have a really tough time containing Wazoo's passing game. So
yeah, that's pretty. Yeah, I agree. I'd agree with that.
So you know, I feel like WSU could pretty easily put up 30 or 40 points. And the question is, you know, so can Colorado State also put up 30 or 40 points? And you know, I'd be mildly surprised if Colorado State was able to do that. I mean, the Cougar defense has definitely laid some turds this year. Arizona State being a good example. You know, Marion Grice ran all over the place, and Taylor Kelly was awesome. And so, I mean, it's certainly the potential is there to you know, perhaps not play great. But if you're asking me what the most probable outcome is, I think something like, you know, 35, 38 to 23 or 24 or something like that, I think is probably about where it's going to be.
Excellent. Yeah, I think if CSU needs a big game from like Corey James or Shaquille Burt to get to the quarterback to kind of try to disrupt that passing game, that's kind of what they need to do.
Connor Halliday is definitely more prone to poor decisions when there's pressure on him. He's gotten better at that. He's gotten better at, you know, not forcing the ball downfield when there's guys in his face. But he definitely does not like guys around his feet. And if they are able to get some pass rush, I think that's probably their most likely most likely plan of success for forcing him into some of those bad throws he can be notorious for.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. So that's just thanks for joining me, Jeff. Yeah, you got some excellent insight for Washington State versus CSU and Mexico Bowl. A lot of stuff I didn't know about. Thanks. I'm assuming most of the listeners don't watch the Pac-12 network like me.
Like a lot of people, right? Anybody
DirecTV, who's got TV, awesome.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. So, yeah, thank you for joining us from KookCenter.com. We will probably converge back and forth a little bit here and there until bowl season comes out. So check out their site. We'll import some of their stuff. So just everybody check everybody's stuff out at Kook Center. And, yeah, just thanks for joining us this evening, and let's hope for a good bowl game.
My pleasure, Jeremy. Thanks.
Yeah, I'd like once again to thank Matt from CowboyAltitude.com to discuss the coaching hire of Craig Bull. Kind of a little recap of their seasons, kind of went over a few things here and there, kind of to wrap things up for the Wyoming year. So this is Craig Bull era. We'll kind of see how he does during the FCS playoffs with North Dakota State. And I think he's right. If they play longer into this postseason for the FCS title, better they look, because they'll always mention future Wyoming head coach Craig Bull. They'll always mention Wyoming as good exposure. And if they win, it's like, hey, I've won 3 straight national titles, brought the team up from D2 to FCS. That's probably a bigger jump than FCS to FBS, almost. Well, I wouldn't say it's bigger, but still a pretty sizable jump going from different divisions. But that was a good hire, good stuff by Matt, discussing all things Wyoming. So check out his stuff at cowboyaltitude.com. And then also we went to some bowl talk. We're trying to get these bowl interviews in as we can. So talk to Jeff Nusser from KookCenter.com. They have an excellent staff of writers over there doing a bunch of good content. They had our guy Jacob
on there the other day on their podcast talking the same thing we're doing, the New Mexico Bowl. That's a good insight. It's a good old pirate Mike Leach we know and love about him throwing the ball 100 times a game, which is only a slight exaggeration of what he really does. So check out their stuff at KookCenter.com. Like I said, we were kind of interchanging content back and forth. A lot of some of their stuff on our site. They may promote some of ours just because we got the abilities to do that in our network, and that's awesome. So, and everything kind of what we're going on for the rest of the schedule for the podcast up to bowl week. We still have two more bowl games next a week from Saturday, and so we'll kind of get some interviews. We'll probably just keep your iTunes ready. Keep your Stitcher radio on track. That's how you can listen. Go to SoundCloud.com. Find us over there at the Mountain West Connection. Check our podcast page. We're going to have not our normal schedule. It's typically, what do we do, Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday, Thursday for the shows. For the week, the bowl season's different. We're trying to get as many interviews, experts on that know the other teams better than we do. So I'd expect, right now I think we have at least two shows coming up next week. We'll probably have a third, depending on what me and Chris decide to do. And yes, Chris was preoccupied this evening. He had some other important stuff going on. So harass him on Twitter at Greek Padre. Tell him he missed out some good stuff. And yeah, just join us at MWCConnection.com and just keep on the lookout for our next podcast. And like I said, keep those RSS feeders up and rolling and keep watching for when we're back around. And we'll talk to everybody next time.